It's really one of the great moments of history. The excitement of the Kennedy era that was upon us back in 1961 was certainly the conversation of the nation. And just before he left office, President Dwight D. Eisenhower had this parting shot for America and for all of the future years. 50 years ago today, listen.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
It was not much of a precedent to give a farewell speech for a president, but in that speech, General Eisenhower, in a sense, characterized the decades that would come later. And 50 years ago today, from that speech, we're going to examine the military-industrial complex, something that is very real in our lives, with William Hartung, director of the Arms and Security Initiative at the New America Foundation and author of Prophets of War, Lockheed Martin and the Making of the Military-Industrial Complex. It's his new book. William Hartung, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You know, Eisenhower, said something that he certainly was an expert on, being the general that won World War II, being someone who understood the Pentagon in and out, both from his perspective as a president and as a general. Yet still, what he said was so astoundingly prophetic looking back 50 years ago today. What do you make of the military-industrial complex and his predictions 50 years ago?
Well, I think it's larger and in some ways more dangerous today even than it was then. We're spending twice as much on the military. We have large companies like Lockheed Martin getting over $30 billion in government contracts per year. We have companies working for the intelligence agencies in a significant amount more than they were then. So certainly in terms of the size and the reach, it's a whole different complex from the one he was worried about.
And your story of Lockheed Martin really tracks how a company or a set of companies really place themselves in a position to benefit from how the government would evolve and actually politically help to make the government evolve in the way that would benefit it. Describe, first of all, what you found in your investigation of Lockheed Martin.
Well, they used a lot of the traditional tools of influence, the revolving door, campaign contributions, arguments about jobs. But also, they've reached out into other areas of government activity, not only intelligence, but surveillance, homeland security, even working for the IRS. So they've kind of branched out in a way from their traditional base and, you know, I think really have a broader influence.
You know, I'm wondering, but to step back to Eisenhower for just a brief moment, the military-industrial complex that we now have, that we think of today, I wonder if that's really what he was talking about in his original speech. I mean, he was certainly, in the rest of the speech, he warned about the Cold War and how we may have to amp up response to it. And you wonder, as you're looking at the text of his full speech, if, I mean, he was certainly no anti-war activist, if he was really warning about the dangers of this, or maybe the military-industrial complex, the dangers inherent there for him was more a fiscal issue than a military one.
Well, he wanted balance in all aspects of the budget, and that was a big concern in the speech. And he fought against the people who said there was a bomber gap, there was a missile gap, and those certainly had budgetary implications. He tried to hold the military budget steady until Sputnik sort of forced his hand to increase it.
And the space war became the sort of clarion call for the Cold War, which became the space race. But it was really the military narrative that was driving even the trip to the moon. Kennedy admitted as much in his speeches. We go to the moon to really defeat the Soviets in propaganda terms. Describe the psychological dimensions of the military-industrial complex. When you look at the quote in Eisenhower's speech, the potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power, you get the sense that he felt the pressure that was coming from the Pentagon and from the forces behind the Pentagon to maintain a war footing in America. Do you see that?
Absolutely. I think part of his concern was that the public was feeling this because of the lobbying, even advertising by the industry for planes that were not requested by the Pentagon, and this notion that essentially the Democrats were outflanking him on the right. So Kennedy ran on the missile gap against Nixon. Nixon took some positions more militaristic than what Eisenhower had pursued to try to, you know, compete with Kennedy's rhetoric.
And we are not, I mean, we are at war. But we are not threatened in the sense today as we were during the Cold War or during World War II. Yet, in fiscal terms, the American investment in military spending is almost greater than at any time since World War II. Put that in perspective for us.
Well, in addition to the wars, we've had a big buildup of the base Pentagon budget, and I think they've taken advantage of that climate to build things even like the F-22 combat aircraft, which only finally was ended last year by Secretary Gates. But here we had a plane that had never been used in warfare, the largest and most expensive fighter plane in history, and it took all that the Obama administration could bring to bear, including a threat of a veto, to end it at the same level that the Pentagon wanted.
Which tells the story of the power of the defense industries to be in every congressional district, in every state, and to have a political constituency in Congress in all regions. We're talking with William Hartung, director of the Arms and Security Initiative at the New America Foundation. His book is Profits of War, all about Lockheed Martin and the making of the military-industrial complex. Finally, before we go, Gary Wills writes in his book Bomb Power that the nuclear genie has also contributed to this in the sense that it's created a White House with control of the nuclear button, which puts it in a sort of super status in terms of power over the other branches of government. Do you buy that the military-industrial complex has benefited from the nuclear genie and the idea that the White House can sort of control the idea of what is security in America?
Yes, I do. I think the secrecy surrounding the bomb, the fact that the president is the one with his finger on the button, Congress doesn't really have a say in that, and it's a way to say, you know, we have expertise that you don't. You have to listen to the experts. The experts are controlled by the White House.
Eisenhower had no idea how right he was going to be, is your conclusion.
Exactly.
William Hartung, director of the Arms and Security Initiative at the New America Foundation. Check out his book, Profits of War, Lockheed Martin and the Making of the Military-Industrial Complex, something Eisenhower predicted 50 years ago today.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.